News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It is 6:33. This is News Talk Breakfast Business. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock, Alison Couser of Dragon's Den and the East Coast Bakehouse will be here, fresh from last night's Women's Executive Network Awards, where frustration at Leo Varadkar's ministerial pick seems to have been a big, big theme. Fiona Redden of the Irish Times will be giving me the inside track on who's up and who's down in this year's top 1,000 companies rankings. And Peter Brown of the Institute of Investing and Financial Trading will be here just before 7 o'clock with the latest from the markets. First off, quick look at this morning's papers. It's a year since Brexit. It's a year since the vote, rather than the event, I suppose. It's a year since the referendum. And there's lots and lots across the Irish and the UK papers to mark the date. There's a pull-out supplement in the Irish Times. There's five dedicated papers in the Indo. In terms of hard news on Brexit, the main line really is Theresa May offering a deal to protect the rights of 3 million EU workers living in the UK post-Brexit. That's in exchange for reciprocal rights for British workers and British residents in the rest of the EU. At home, Simon Coveney is pushing for a special status. I think the terminology around special status is going to be problematic, but for a special status or for some sort of special terms and conditions for the North that would minimise border arrangements. Elsewhere, power and success don't just come in a pinstripe suit. On the front page of the Irish Independent, Ousted Cabinet Minister Mary Mitchell Connor told an event to celebrate women business leaders last night. That's a report from Dervin MacDonald and Samantha McCochrane. At the Women's Executive Network event last night, they described the speech as a broadside at Leo Varadkar's ministerial picks. Tough talk there. That is more or less it for the papers for now. Anyway, tough talk from Mary Mitchell O'Connor. My first guest, Alison Couser, is best known from Dragon's Den and an experienced businesswoman in her own right. Good morning, first of all, Alison.
Good morning, Donald. How are you?
I'm good. You were at the Women's Executive Network. You spoke at the conference yesterday. You were at the dinner last night. How did that speech, Mary Mitchell O'Connor's speech, go down?
She brought the house down, frankly. A very sympathetic audience. But I think what was really refreshing to see was absolute honesty. No deciding to say the political thing. She said the right thing. She said she spoke the truth. And I think it's really refreshing to see that being called out when we see very disappointing figures from the cabinet appointments this week particularly. So I think we've got to hear more of that. We've got to hear more of real views.
And that chimed with the movement.
Completely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So explain to me a bit about the event and the Women's Executive Network. There was a conference yesterday and
yeah, so it's an organisation of about 2,500 members in Ireland. It's also very active in Canada and in the UK. So really what the organisation does is showcases female talent and female expertise and female achievement across many sectors, most particularly in the business area, but also across areas of the public sector, sport, arts and entertainment. So really, it's about showing what's possible. It's about showing that it can be done, and putting in place, I think, examples of for younger women coming through, and for people who are currently in positions that that while the system is extremely difficult, and in many cases the system is working against progress, we got to change it, and we got to move forward and put in place the supports and networks that will drive change, because what we do need change. Currently, I mean, the ISAC index is showing 12% representation of females on boards. It's just not good enough. It's not good enough for those companies and those companies. Consumers and customers either to see such an imbalance, and if you consider so many of the purchasing decisions that are made across our society by women in many categories, it's significantly well above that 50% level. To see that level of representation in business just not add up.
Do you think the ministerial picks last week and this week, do you think that's galvanised women a bit?
I think there's a lot happening to galvanise women, across the globe. We only have to look to what's happening in the US. We look to some fantastic examples of what's happening in Canada with Justin Trudeau and his 50-50 cabinet, and organisations in Ireland working to change that. I'm on the board of Women for Election. We're crowdfunding at the moment to raise 50 grand to train 300 women, hashtag more women if you want to contribute. But it's really about putting those supports in place and showing that there is a way forward. Change is extremely difficult. Change is disruptive. disruptive. Change means that the incumbents have to move, and that is not easy. So it is requiring a groundswell, I think, of change. Interestingly, at our launch last week, Frances Fitzgerald made a comment that I thought was, you know, just extremely honest. She said that Ireland has, despite the fact that we've come a long way, and she's been calling for more women for many years, she described it as an unfinished democracy. I thought that was extremely powerful to hear that from a minister in our cabinet. And I think, you know, the organisations like WXN that are working across all levels of business to change that is something that's going to deliver change, but we've got to get behind it.
And you spoke at WXN yesterday. Packed event. I suppose there can be a danger that an event like that, which is really about women who have made it or who've sort of broken through, can become a backslapping exercise or can sort of become an end in itself. How do you sort of guard against that?
I think you look at some of the younger women that have come through. Kira Clancy of Beats Medical, one of the leaders of the future, she spoke extremely powerfully last night. She's looking to solve the problems in the area of Parkinson's disease with a technological input there, and she's done amazing work. Iselt Ward of Food Cloud, you know, both women in their early 20s. And I think that events like yesterday are about empowering and inspiring women like that to come through. You know, you could say it's an echo chamber, but, you know, if you're going to change, you've got to get people around at the beginning that are going to support that change and drive it. And yes, we want male voices on this as well. It's not just about changing things for women, it's about changing society. And as we do that, we bring everybody with us and becomes a better society. It's not about just a marginalised. Catherine Murphy again at TD said last week, we've got to stop thinking that women are a minority. We're 51% of the population. You know, get that mindset out and move forward.
In your own business, East Coast Bakehouse, you're up and running about a year now in terms of production. big investment in Drogheda. How's that going? And I suppose particularly where you are on the border, Brexit, sort of you can't ignore Brexit.
No, so we're up and running about a year now. We're outlisted in all of the supermarkets. All been really supportive. Great consumer reaction. We've 40 people now employed in Drogheda, and we're in an area where we're ultimately, you know, very vulnerable in that border region to Brexit, but also in the context of we're looking at the UK as a major yep. market for us. So, you know, we've got to change tack, and we've got to be nimble and reactive.
How do you do that as a business? Because we're sort of dealing with unknowns, really.
We are dealing with so many. I mean, we're sitting here a year after the Brexit vote last year, and we still don't know what's going to happen. And we still don't know whether tariffs are going to be imposed. If they are imposed in the food sector, it will be an absolute catastrophe. The jobs will be incredibly vulnerable across the country in so many areas, not just in the Eastern Seaboard, but looking right across the country, regional areas that really support thousands of food jobs. So it's a massive issue. We participated in a Board B Brexit barometer, which was essentially a survey just to see how Brexit ready we were, and we're not. And many companies
are not.
And
what's that? You just sort of sit down and go through
through a very detailed questionnaire on how business ready you are for that external shock. And, you know, like many other companies, we have an enormous amount of work to do. You know, we can hope for the best, but we've got to prepare for the worst.
So more to do all around. Alison Kauser, thanks for coming in. It is 6:45 and I am joined by Fiona Redden, journalist with the Irish Times and editor of the Top 1000 Irish Companies Rankings, which were published this morning. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Jonah.
Thank you for coming in. I suppose you do this every year, so I suppose the thing to look out for are kind of key changes. What are you noticing?
Yeah, well, Donald, this year I think the key trend there is just how healthy the companies are. I mean, profits just continue to soar. We've got profits of 34 billion across the top 1,000 Irish companies this year, which is up substantially on mid-20s figure last year. So at one level, things seem to be going really well. The entry level for getting into the top 1,000 is up at 18 million. Previously, it was down at 16 million. So companies are getting bigger. They're selling more. They're making more profits. But on the other side, I guess it's important to note that you can still see signs of the downturn within the survey. I mean, the second biggest profitable company in Ireland is the Central Bank.
Right.
So, you know, that's obviously to do with issues to do with Anglo bonds. You're not going to see that for very much longer, but it's still there as the second most profitable company with profits of more than 2 billion. Then you've got, you know, banks still making losses like Permanent TSB. Most of the financial sector is back in the black, but you will see some outliers like that.
There's still a drag there. And then on the other hand, you've just got profits gushing out. And I suppose that was reflected last year in corporation tax receipts.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I know there's some concern, isn't there, over There's a lot of dependence on multinationals, maybe 10 multinationals contributing as much as 40% of total corporation tax revenues. And in our survey now, it's not the same. It's more of an extrapolation, but you've got the top 10 taxpayers paying about $3 billion in tax out of total corporation tax of $7
billion. Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
a high density there.
In terms of the biggest, who is the biggest?
CRH. Surprisingly not. I guess it's good to see an Irish company. We hear mm-hmm. so much of the Googles and Facebooks, etc., doing business in Ireland, but it's still an Irish company.
And how are you ranking them?
I mean, is that sort of... That's global turnover.
Yeah.
And I guess in comparison with the Google or a Facebook, it will be turnover based in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in terms of private companies then, because the PLCs, I suppose, it's reasonably straightforward. You can access a reasonable amount of information reasonably readily. Mm-hmm. Private companies, much more tricky.
Well, you've said it. I mean, I guess some of the fastest movers this year are probably the supermarkets, your Dunn Stores, your Aldi and your Lidl, all of whom are notoriously private. But Tesco published their results, so you can kind of extrapolate based on their sales and market share figures how right. big these companies are getting in Ireland.
And how big are they?
They're all in the top 100 now, yep. top 50.
In terms of rising stars then, are there sort of companies sort of emerging that caught your
yeah,
eye?
Yeah, these are the smaller companies we look at that have turnovers of less than 100 million. And Intercom, which is, you know, a software company based in Dublin, and they've more than doubled their turnover. We'll also have companies in the construction sector, which you might expect. They've also performed very strongly.
Are they companies that were around before? Are they
are companies that were around before. But I would have a little caveat because we've seen some of the larger companies like Mercury Engineering. They have had a softening in turnover just in their most recent accounts. So I guess construction is resurging, but there's still some, it's not quite
there's
back
still stress
there yet.
In there, yeah.
Yeah.
Not great news for women, it looks like.
I know. Well, I mean, we've got a new woman at Bank of Ireland shortly, but elsewhere the survey shows that it's just 10% of all the top 1,000 companies have a female as a CEO. And that's actually down from the last time we looked at that in 2014, from 11%.
And that's across public and private companies, family-owned, privately-owned.
Exactly, across everything. And I mean, it compares well internationally. If you look at the S&P 500, it could be as low as 5%. But you'd still by now possibly expect it to be higher.
A bit more reflective of the people at work.
Exactly.
In terms of the top 1,000, who's that aimed at then?
It's aimed at everybody working in Ireland in business.
And so in the database itself then, sort of, where is it available? Who buys it?
Yeah, it's on irishtimes.com/top1000 and it'll go live there today with all the newest figures.
Fiona Redden of the Irish Times, thanks for coming in. It's 6:53 and Peter Brown of the Institute of Investing and Financial Trading is with me now for the markets. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, John.
We'd better start with AIB. We'll have the official price in a couple of minutes, but it looks like we come more or less know where it's coming in.
Around about 4.40, which is cheap, I think. Could be a bargain. You know, the possibility that over the next while that you could get a spike up towards €5, maybe 5.20, which would be around about a 15% return. I'd be grabbing that, I have to say. And the IPO is a very short-term bit of a gamble sort of thing. And then holding AIB in your portfolio for 3 to 5 years is an investment. I'm not a fan of holding bank stocks in my portfolio long-term, but the possibility of getting a quick winner on AIB, that's out there.
So we're trying for a flip rather than as a sort of a long-term investment.
Absolutely.
Think?
An IPO is a flip and because it normally gets hyped and the volatility is in the 15-20% range. Even Alibaba, all of them are in the 15-20% range. So that's not really an investment issue. It's more of a little gamble. But if you got a profit, I'd be taking it.
Retail interest, though, has been fairly muted in this IPO.
Yeah, it's a minimum of 10 grand. Which is one of the issues. And I think people feel, you know, I mean, there's still a hangover of bank stocks and, you know, banking is challenged. It's challenged on two fronts, very simply. Technology is a huge challenge for banking. And the second thing is a zero interest rate environment is very, very tough for banks. No money earned on free balances, no money earned on deposits. So banking is challenging. But if you get a quick profit here, 15-20%, I'd be saying thank you very much.
But in and out. In terms of the wider markets, oil seems to be a big driver of everything at the minute.
Yeah, there's no other story in the market but oil. It is the only story, but it's a huge story. And the oil situation is very simple. I mean, the complexity of what is driving the prices is one thing, but the oil story itself is very simple. Once oil starts falling below $40, it's $43 at the moment. If it starts falling below $43, Russia is losing money, Canada's losing money, Saudi Arabia's losing money. You've got about 3 years before Russia goes bust. Now, what really scares financial markets is the concept of banks going bust. And if Russia defaults and you've got, because they're losing money in oil, you know, banks are going to go bust. So oil is the sort of product that can cause a massive, massive market movement. We're not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, the stock markets did fall 15% in February in 2016 when the oil price hit $28. So a sustained low oil price below $40 is a very worrying thing for the financial markets.
And the Saudis, they just haven't been able to no matter what they've sort of done diplomatically or otherwise, just to hike that price.
They can't get production down low enough. There's a lot of issues. We could talk about oil probably for hours. You know, the Americans seem to be able to produce it very, very cheaply. There's too much production. You know, if you cut production, do you risk the point of not selling enough oil in the next 10 years and then nobody wants it in 10 years' time? There's all of that complexity to it. But the price of it is very, very important for the financial markets, because a sustained low oil price means people are going bust, and that scares the financial markets.
And what is the range at the moment? I mean, is it the bottom of the range now?
No, well, kind of, it's a lot of people think maybe 30, between 35 and 38. We were at 52 only a while ago. So 52 is livable with. We can do a bit of extend and pretend on the people who are in debt. But if the outlook for oil for the next 5 years is sub 50, then there's a lot of companies out there that are bust, and there's a lot of countries out there that are bust.
So that's the one to watch. Peter, yes, Brown, absolutely. Thanks for coming in. The time is now just coming up to 6:58. You're listening to News Talk Breakfast Business.
News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.